and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 585.
That's right. The Green Lantern Dark number 2 review. Recap, review, whatever.
Yes, we're going to try to rip through this, not because we're trying to shortchange it, but because for the most part, we are in agreement that this is a much, not that the last issue was necessarily not straightforward, but it was dense. And this issue is definitely straightforward and not dense. So
yeah, it's safe to say the first issue we're really trying to not just dissect the issue, but really find our footing in this new world to figure out where we were and the kind of story we were being told. And it looks like one of our assumptions last issue was right, that it seems like maybe for the most part we're going to be hopping from kind of like threat to threat.
Yes.
Issue to issue. Although obviously this is a different situation, but yeah, for the most part, like every one or two issues. Yeah.
Which I think based on the structure of this issue, I think we did speculate on this too, that the reality is not everything had to be like a one issue, a one off. So this storyline clearly is not a one issue story arc. It might be only a two issue arc. We don't know, but we know it's definitely not a one and done, like the, on the surface anyway, what the Solomon Grundy issue one was.
Correct. And just for those of you playing along at home, quick acknowledgement, I'm dealing with seasonal allergies. That's why I sound like this, but we will endeavor to persevere regardless.
So let's jump into it. It begins quite in an interesting spot to begin with, because we kind of get a prologue. We kind of get the beginning via narration, which I guess by the way the book ends, the narration is supposed to be by from Rena, I believe, from the Green Lantern herself. But it basically gives the explanation of how the world was before everything literally turned dark. And I kind of liked her observations, because they kind of reference the point which we can relate to, and how while the technology has kind of improved and on some level there's more light than usual than ever before, at least symbolically, that it, we're also a lot less connected, and there's a lot less hope in the world, even though despite that fact. And she kind of like uses that as a juxtaposes that with the arrival of multiple names on this, the obsidian seeds, the necrospores, the eclipso crystals. Which ones did you like the best, Chad?
Just in terms of what it could bring us in terms of understanding, honestly, eclipso crystals. I will say what you just said. My favorite line in her intro, can you recall a time when this planet was well and not simply surviving?
Yeah.
Boy, does that resonate. I can't remember the last time like everything like, you know, Blue Lantern, all will be well. I can't remember the last time everything was just hunky dory.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can. So we find out that these seeds or these crystal spores, whichever term you wanted to use, they basically crash to Earth, and they kind of do their own form of terraforming. That, you know, volcanoes that were never there before basically started bursting through the ground. Sinkholes just started coming out of nowhere, and cities and towns just pretty much fell in completely. And the whole planet pretty much was changed and turned into this dark mess that we now have inherited in the series. We find out a little more explanation or defining what we thought might have been going on by looking at the map. That the entire New England area of the east coast of the U.S. pretty much is now broken off, and it's an island, and it's surrounded by this skull island-like black fog bank that nothing can penetrate, No outsider can get in, and pretty much nobody, I guess, at the moment from New England has figured out how to get out. So this just sets the stage for the threat of the month, quote unquote, which we find out that this is in a city called New Camelot. Probably can read into that what you wish. You have a mother, as we find out, her name is Grace, with two kids. And as we also will find out in this issue, the threat for New Camelot is pretty much every single night a monster, not always the same monster, a new monster shows up, and basically it's stealing their children. At least it steals, or is aiming to steal at least one child, if not more, every single night. And that's the threat that we basically have to deal with. And Grace's son gets taken by this kind of like this griffin looking thing, kind of like a cat and a griffin, kind of like combined into one. Now we cut back to Lantern's Light, where we have our drunken, continually drunken Green Lantern, Rena, who Loon is trying to kind of like motivate to like, A, not be drunk all the time, and to come out and kind of like associate with the town, with the townspeople. And she continues not to do that. She just isolates herself. We'll talk about that, kind of like the trope of the hero. The reluctant hero. I guess we'll delve into that when we break down the issue. So we cut back to the diner, and her annoying brother keeps basically trying to. I don't know. He's just such an annoying character. He's such a negative character. Even though he's trying to be the voice of reason, but it doesn't seem it. And at this point, shortly after, Grace comes in, and Grace really needs help here with the one surviving child, her daughter. Rena comes in basically looking for more beer, and she kind of gets forced recruited, and she's again reluctantly agrees that okay, she'll help clean up one more town, because we find out that what she has done in cleaning up Lantern's Light, stopping Grundy, that story has already spread like wildfire pretty much throughout New England, and people are drawing like lantern symbols, you know, inside their house and all this stuff. So she's not keen on doing this, but she basically agrees that she'll go to New Camelot to deal with the threat, which all seems to emanate from this castle on the hill. And that's where the children are taken to. So we get to New Camelot, and the threat, everybody wants, well, not everybody, it's kind of torn between, I think Grace says, I think she's the one who says we should wait till the morning, when the monsters aren't out there, to basically go to the castle. Loon, is trying to appeal to Green Lantern that, well, we have to do it now, because if we don't, another child could be taken tonight. Rena does what she does best throughout most of this issue, which is she drinks. She kind of bonds a little bit with Grace. I'm not sure if it's supposed to imply that there's some potential romantic interest going on here or not. Who knows anymore in this. But while Rena is still pretty much determined not to do anything until the next morning, the conversation between Luna and Grace is interesting, and she kind of complains about the responsibility and having a kid out of the blue that she has to basically take care of. And Grace points out, well, you sound like a mother. That's what like being a mother is. But unfortunately, Loon overhears this about basically the interpretation of being a burden to Green Lantern, and she kind of freaks out on her, and she says why did you give me this light pseudo lantern that we saw her use last issue, and there's this big confrontation between Green Lantern and Loon, and just at this point, a monster pretty much breaks through the ceiling and then knocks Green Lantern down. Loon stands up, basically tries to stand up, and she starts reciting the Green Lantern oath. She gets taken by the monster. When Rena and Green Lantern recover, she realizes this, and she pretty much acknowledges that she has, the acknowledgement that now, the Green Lantern had no choice but to venture into the castle. Now we get a brief epilogue where we find out that, not surprisingly, Grundy is still alive. He's crawling through the desert until he sees plants all over the place, and we hear Solomon, is that you? And I like that. You look like Absolute. You know what? Like the Green Lantern bit back this time, did she? Went and grew a spine, and perhaps it's time we remove that spine from her body. So it probably is a tangent universe, Poison Ivy. That's what Chad and I think. And that's what it says, to be continued. So this issue was titled Chapter 2, No Camelot. Writer was Tate Bromball. Artist and covers by Werther Della Dera, colorist Giovanna Nero, Tom Napolitano, letterer, variant covers Rico Murakami, Dustin Nguyen, Kathy Kwan, assistant editor Ash Padilla, and what did I miss? Oh, assistant editor Ash Padilla, editor Andrea Shea, executive editor, geez, there's a lot of these editors, Chris Conroy, and then we have the Dan Juergens credit for creating the Tangent universe.
And we get the map again.
Yes, we get the map again, so we see the difference between when we see the location between Lantern's light, and we see how the distance and a relative location of New Camelot compared to Lantern's light.
It looks like we have like 14 or 15 other points, if you count the what looks like a compass.
Yeah.
Symbol. It's interesting. It's almost like it almost reminds me of like a video game completion map, like. Okay, the story in Lantern's Light is done. We have dealt with the boss from that level, so that one has the lantern symbol over it. Light has been spread to that town. Now our new quest is onto this town called New Camelot, and I assume once we complete that mission, you know, that town will be marked as completed or whatever with a lantern symbol. It's almost like a quest to spread light across these various points, but given how long is the series supposed to be?
I don't know. I don't think there's enough issues to go through all those dots.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
And Loon is the narrator. I don't know why I said that it's the Green Lantern. I knew it was Loon from reading the end that they make it because she talks about like this was the moment that I was taken.
Yeah.
So Loon is the narrator, which makes sense because they refer to Green Lantern in the third party. I mean, a third person by the end anyway. So.
Yeah, what she says, when I learned the cost of hope, the cost of her light. So hopefully she'll have a little more empathy for what the Green Lantern is going through.
Yeah, I would say so, though the reluctant hero bit is going to get old if that doesn't like kind of like start ending now with this arc, you know, especially the drunken reluctant hero. That's kind of an old trope that I don't think that'll work all. I think that'll get old if it's something that's lingering by the time we get to like issue 8 and she still has to be taken kicking and screaming into every conflict.
I think they need to come to step towards each other. Like Loon needs to give Rena some grace and understanding.
No pun intended.
And Rena needs to step the fuck up. But I think you know, the struggle with I never wanted this power, but also the responsibility of this power that people die if she doesn't take action. But in a world that's so goddamn hopeless, she was still chosen to do this. And, you know, she's responsible for so many people potentially dying. I don't know. That would definitely get to you, especially if you're like, I never wanted this. So there's that. One interesting bit of a recognition I saw here. The way the lantern functions, especially when she's sitting down having a drink with Grace right before the attack, it's bright, and it's unclear whether these moths are just moths being drawn to a light like a regular moth is drawn to a light, or if these moths are part of the light. I don't know. But when they're attacked, the lantern straight up, or right before they're attacked, actually, the lantern just transforms into this ball of energy that's zipping around the room. And then they're attacked, and she tries to reach out, gets knocked out, and then the ball of light swirling around her when she comes to, and then the ball of light forms back into the staff and the lantern, which was interesting. I don't know if it did that last issue.
Off the top of my head, I can't say that I remember that it did, but then again, it's been a while since we read the last issue.
Yeah, it seems to have some sort of transformative properties. Also, bit of a, I don't know, acknowledgement of magic at the very least, if not religious significance, of the idea of drawing the lantern on the door. Kind of reminds me of the biblical story I grew up with the spirit of the Lord passing over Egypt and taking the firstborn son, unless you had, what, goat's blood over the door?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, so... You know, a symbol on the door to ward off evil. That's interesting. And seeing that everywhere she goes probably doesn't really lend much to her imposter syndrome or whatever it is you want to call it, what she has. I thought the art and the coloring did pretty well here.
Yep.
Especially when things get dark and terrifying. with the monsters, you know, when you choose the colors of like the pinks, the purples, the blues, the blacks in juxtaposition to either the green of the Green Lantern or the faded earthen tones of the kind of bleak world that they're in. It really is stark contrast, to be honest with you. So that's cool. Yeah. Loon's brother, piece of shit. Kind of annoying. I wonder how much of an age difference there is between him and Loon, because you'd think with their mother gone, he'd feel a sense of responsibility for his sister. But I don't, you know, that's just me being a brother, and that's my approach of being a brother. So some sense of protection and responsibility for my sister, but I know that's not how everybody was raised. I know that's not how every brother-sister relationship is. So I just don't identify with whatever bullshit he's got going on in his mind. But then again, especially if they are close in age, I have to remember this kid just lost his mother too. So, you know, he could just be processing it with the same level of, or dialed up to 10 level of sarcasm and whatever bullshit he was dealing with before, just to seem like he's okay with it and coping.
It could be a factor. I mean, to be honest, not that we get a lot of him this issue, thank God, but it's also true that based on what he's actually written to do in this issue, he's not nearly as annoying. No. But it's just that the baggage is there for all of us, because he was, for you and I at least, when I say all of us, because he was so frigging annoying and so just, you know, poking the bear every single step of the way in the last issue, that he doesn't get any benefit of the doubt. So until there's any kind of dramatic personality shift, that is hard to, it's hard to say, okay, he's, now we understand why he's the way he is. Or like you said, that, well, you know, maybe part of why he's the way he is because he's dealing with grief in his own way, except he was douchey long before his mother died in that issue. So
level of destruction that the world has gone through, because at one of the panels you can tell it's very clearly a sketch of North America, and it looks like the continent has broken into like four pieces at the very least.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
That's crazy. But, you know, New England being separate, its own island and everything, that really helps kind of localize the story. Makes me wonder what else is going on in the world, or if everybody's facing the same kind of difficulties, or if it's all just somehow weirdly localized to New England.
I would assume it's not, probably, but then again, it might be. It may be more. There may be a different level, I should say, of what's going on because of the fog. Maybe the fog has a relation to keeping everything contained, like the, you know, like almost like a greenhouse effect. In fact, it just keeps everything pushed into that area. So maybe there's a higher concentration of it.
Yeah.
It was good. I thought the issue was good. I thought it was. So both the first two issues of the series, I think, have been good so far.
Yeah, artistic, wonderful. And it looks like, is Grundy crawling out of the fog? Is this what's on the other side of the fog, or is this middle of the desert, or what?
Let me go back and look at that page. I didn't interpret it that way, but he could be coming out of fog, but it does not necessarily mean that he's been able to make it to the other side. But I guess it's possible. I mean, unless that's supposed to be. But then again, if he was making it through the fog, then he should have been making it through water, too.
Yeah.
If again, based on the premise or the impression that I'm getting, that you're insinuating that maybe he made it over to the other side. I doubt it, only because she's referencing Green Lantern and she knows Green Lantern is there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess this is just a different, maybe there's a different part, or may, but you could be right. I don't think we can definitively say, because at the moment there's not enough information. I mean, if you look at the map where Lantern's light is, it's not that close to the coast.
No.
So that would be kind of hard to believe that he got knocked so far that he basically got knocked to the outskirts, like to the left bank, you know, the left coast of the Forgotten Lands, if you will, and somehow made its way over to the shore. I mean, it's possible, but that's not how I took it.
And before we were recording, we were talking, this, we think this might be Poison Ivy, the Tangent Universe Poison Ivy, right?
Right. Yeah, I mentioned, but we don't. But there's no way to know for sure. The only reason that gives is the fact that everything's all green, which it might be the only explanation for why this is not so dark and everything either. And the fact that she has some. Well, see, the thing is, it looks like there's some vegetation around her, but those could just be moths and butterflies or whatever the hell's flying in the air. But either way, because she kind of almost looks. I mean, even her dress kind of like is butterfly-like. But either way, I mean, the simple reality is. If it's not Poison Ivy, then we would have no idea who she is at this point. So it's speculation based on if it is somebody we know, it probably would be Tangent Universe Poison Ivy.
Well, I mean, there's an interesting wrinkle if it is Poison Ivy, given her power set, at least typically speaking, for a Poison Ivy in the multiverse. We have to remember that Grundy is kind of like Swamp Thing. He was taken by the swamp, and he is part of the swamp, of Slaughter Swamp outside of Gotham or whatever. And that's why Alan's ring never worked on him, because it registered Solomon Grundy as part wood. He is part plant matter, at least historically speaking, canonically speaking. So if that is Poison Ivy, that's an interesting wrinkle to play with, that Solomon answers to her in some way.
Given, it also could also explain how she can heal him, assuming that she does. And also, and I guess more circumstantial, or shall we say tangential, hints that it could be Poison Ivy is just the fact that clearly she knows who he is, and we have to assume he knows who she is. So if you tie that together, you know. Obviously, Poison Ivy and Solomon Grundy should know each other from their villainous history and team ups. So the reality is that it doesn't have to be, but it gives more circumstantial evidence that if we had to guess, probably it's certainly more likely to be Poison Ivy than a brand new character we have no idea who that it supposedly is.
True, but we're also not intimately familiar with the Tangent Universe. I have two of the three trades. But I haven't read them because I think I have 1 and 3 and I'm missing volume 2. If I remember that right, I don't know. Yeah, 1 and 3 and I'm missing volume 2. So I really thought there was no point in me even starting to read it if I couldn't find volume 2 first. I don't know. I enjoyed the art. It continues to impress. It continues to remind me of Something is Killing the Children's Universe. I love the way they play with color. I love, you know, some of the sound effects that get put in there. Those definitely remind me of Something is Killing the Children, for sure. So that's been fun. And, other than some annoying character traits with some of the various characters, like her brother or even Loon to some extent, like I know she's a child and she's feeling a bit amped, like, you know, the power chose me. I have a Green Lantern of my own in a sense or whatever. Like, she really wants to be the hero and everything. She is still a naive kid, which can get annoying, which is why I said I hope they step towards each other a bit more, because she really needs to give up this hero worship and see that Rena is an actual person who doesn't want this and has no idea how to properly handle this, and stop putting all these fucking expectations on her, while at the same time, Rena needs to realize the world that they're in and that, look, the power isn't leaving her anytime soon or choosing anybody else, and she's stuck with it. So, like, you know, she might as well do something while she can. So that's why I was like saying that I hope they step towards each other, as opposed to, you know, one of them says, oh, you were right all along and I was wrong or whatever.
Yeah, I would agree. I would kind of be surprised if that's not where they're going to end up going with this.
But otherwise, yeah, enjoyable issue. Just we're in the world now. There's not a whole lot to break down other than what's on the page. I am very curious about, though we get the very last thing I'll say, though we get, as you mentioned, a bunch of different names for these things, Obsidian Seeds. Okay, that could point towards, you know, a Tangent Universe Obsidian, you know, Necrospores, Necron or Black Lanterns or the Dead of some kind. Eclipso Crystals. Oh, that definitely rings true for some DC stuff. But then they kind of doubled down on the Eclipso Crystals, because later on they refer to it by these black diamonds.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's interesting too. I'd be curious to see what the actual infecting agent is. That's all I got.
Yep, understandable.
All right, what else should we talk about?
Let me do this quick. I have my notes. I got to make sure I actually don't screw this up because I have this written down. So we have what I've seen. I saw two movies last week, actually. So Den of Thieves 2, which was interesting by itself because I've never seen Den of Thieves. Which, as we talk and as we record this, last time I checked, which was as last night, Den of Thieves is number one on HBO Max as far as movies go, which means it actually moved up because it was like number five the week before it came out. So I find that interesting. But as a movie, as a standalone, I don't think you need to see the first movie to, you know, from watching the trailer and probably the first 5 minutes of the movie, you know everything you really need to know about what happened in the first movie to be able to watch the second movie and appreciate it for what it is. It's your pretty standard action movie. It's like Gerard Butler doing Gerard Butler things. So I think that works. I saw The Damned, which was really good to the end. The ending is really weird and it leaves it open to interpretation. The interesting thing is what Rory McCann, the Hound, he's actually in that movie, who also is going to be taking the Ray Stevenson role in Ahsoka season 2, apparently, which I think is cool. And there was something else. There was something else that I wanted to, mention. But one thing, this is a pseudo new segment, but it's not really a new segment in the big picture because it happens like once a year. So it's going to be a page I'm going to make on the site, and I'll just have a new entry. And because I make a lot of playlists, I do a lot of Green Lantern inspired playlists. So the thought hit me that I think I'll do a page of like, and it doesn't have to be a new song. Sometimes it can be an old song, could be something that's recirculating. But the Hal Jordan Parallax Song of the Year. So for 2024, which will be the inaugural one, you know, appropriately enough, it's going to be Defying Gravity from Wicked, from the Wicked movie soundtrack. So I'm just going to make a list of this, and it'll be an ongoing thing however long we last doing this show, though, there'll be at least a new entry every year. I think there was something else I had, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, maybe I should make a playlist of Green Lantern stuff. Not like, you know, makes me think of Green Lantern when I hear this song, but actually like go get some of the highlights from some of the animated films and their scores from the movie. You know, some of Kirby Crackle's songs even. You know, that mentioned Green Lantern. They actually have a whole Green Lantern song, so on and so forth. So maybe we can make a Green Lantern playlist out there if there's not one already on Spotify. But speaking of what have you seen, I went on a little shopping spree for myself. Actually, I'm still in the process of it. I bought a couple of things online and went to eBay, bought a few things. One other hint I want to give people when shopping for stuff on eBay is once you have decided on something and have added it to your cart, assuming you can, because not everything on eBay you can add to your cart. You have to either – you actually have to bid or whatever. But if there's a buy it now option or if that's all it is a buy it now, then typically you should be able to add to cart. Before you go back to your regular search to see what else is on sale, maybe spend a little bit of time and see what the person that you're going to buy from, that item from, what else they have in their store. Because I was missing some issues of Green Lantern, and I was posting about it over on social media because I was making a transition from my current long boxes into some short drawer boxes. And as I did that, I was making sure my CLZ app was up to date, and I, you know, was posting about what I still had, what I was missing, and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I was inspired to fill a couple of holes. And if I didn't click on the profile of this seller, I would not have known that not only did he have several other issues I needed, but also he was having a buy two, get three free sale. So I got 10 issues of various Green Lantern related material for the price of 4. So just a little Green Lantern, eBay hint that you should do. And also I saw when I was shopping, one of the things I did is I bought a couple things for myself on eBay, not eBay, Amazon, because you can, every year Lego puts out new stuff in January. And there was already a new Superman set, a new Batman set. There's a couple of things I wanted. So I picked some of those up for myself. And I've always tool through my wish list just to see if anything is on sale. And Piece by Piece was on sale, the Pharrell Lego movie thing, and the Back to Black Amy Winehouse movie. So I picked those up. I haven't seen the Winehouse movie yet, but I did watch Piece by Piece. Piece by Piece is interesting. It's good, but it is literally as if somebody filmed a Pharrell documentary and interviewed people and put everything together as a, at the very least, a nearly finished draft. And then instead of showing you the actual film material from that documentary, just turned it into Lego. So like, they do some interesting and cool, you know, obviously visual stuff with the Lego stuff, but it is straight up a documentary of Pharrell, but told in the style of Lego. So there was that.
Yeah, it depends how that will play for people, I suppose.
Yeah, it's definitely not as exciting as an actual one of the Lego movies or the Lego Batman movie or Lego Ninjago or whatever. But
no,
it's cool visually speaking, too. They have some fun with the idea of music and the title Piece by Piece and what that means to Pharrell and his approach to life. So it's definitely at the very least interesting.
Yeah, and different takes. Like, it's like that Robbie Williams thing, deciding to make it about a chimpanzee, which obviously has worked horribly from a financial perspective.
He was sort of relating it to the idea, you know, that no energy is created or destroyed. Everything is a piece of something else.
I'm not saying there wasn't an idea behind it. I'm just saying.
I got you.
Yeah. One last thing I did also watch. I did watch Goosebumps: The Vanishing. I watched all of that. So.
Nice.
That was I enjoyed
the new TV series.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that quite a bit. I thought that was better than season one, to be fair.
Yeah, it seems like something that was put together for Goosebumps kids who grew up.
And I think it probably this one was more to design for Hulu than it was for Goosebumps than just for Disney Plus, because you can actually see the spots where they'd be commercial. So I think, even though I know Disney Plus now, if you don't have the high tier, they have commercials, so that doesn't mean anything. But there's more crossover right now between Hulu temporarily, even if it's just temporarily, like Alien Romulus is on Disney Plus and some of the other bigger shows.
All right.
So if you want to contact us, LanternCast.com, the email is LanternCast@gmail.com. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, use hashtag GLCast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Rest in Peace, Stitcher. Any place you listen to us, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.